From downtown Milwaukee, welcome to Money Talk with Bob Landis. Each week, professional advisors from Landis & Company Investments discuss the latest financial developments, offering timely insight and long-term perspective.
This is Money Talk for July 7th, 2023. The Brewers are spending the weekend at home with the Reds. It's the last weekend of Summerfest 2023. Now for something a little different, Shakespeare in the Park, Sunday at Alverno College. Usually if I want culture, I'll eat yogurt. Make mine chocolate yogurt because today is also World Chocolate Day. Okay, here we go. A doctor in Germany was fired for having janitor assist him in surgery. The good doctor was in the middle of amputating a toe when he realized he needed help. So he recruited a nearby janitor to be his surgical assistant. The patient is just fine, minus the toe, of course. The janitor now has a story for the rest of his life, and the doctor, well, he's protesting his firing by wearing open-toed sandals. This little piggy went to market. We've all heard this before. Remove your shoes, take the metal out of your pockets, and your cell phone goes in the basket. Now step on the scale. That's right. New Zealand's Civil Aviation Authority is asking that its national airline weigh passengers in front of God and everybody, all for the express purpose of designing larger seats and wider aisles. I'll just take the bus. A man in Connecticut believes he holds the world record for having the largest collection of Crocs. You know, the shoes that look like the basket they serve French fries in? Well, this shoe fetishist has been collecting Crocs for 16 years, and after spending thousands of dollars, he owns 2,131 pairs of Crocs, and yet he can't understand why he doesn't have a girlfriend. And our headline of the week comes from New Zealand. Pig floats into a second floor bedroom of a flooded house, as if the homeowner didn't have enough problems. On the podcast today, we have Art Rothschild, Dave Sandstrom, Adam Bailey, and with the numbers, here's Joel Dreesing.
Thanks, Max. I'm glad you didn't use Crocs as a segue into me. We got a little beat up on Thursday, but things still sold off on Friday, but they eased up a little. We closed the week with the NASDAQ at 13,661, down 127 points. That's 0.9%. The S&P 500 closed down 1.1% this week at 43.99. The Dow Jones Industrial Average closed 2% down this week, and it was 33,735. And the U.S. Treasury 10-year bill closed at 4.05. That's up from 3.82 at the beginning of the week. It's the second time since November, that the 10-year has closed above 4%. For the year so far, we have got the NASDAQ at almost 31%. Return that's including dividends. The S&P 500 total return is up 15.5%, and the Dow Jones is up 2.9% so far for the year. So, as I said, Thursday was kind of rough. There were the major domestic stock indexes dropped about 1% each. There was a broad sell-off. All 11 sectors of the S&P 500 declined. Bonds sold off as the yields rose. That's when the 10-year eclipsed the 4% mark. Oil prices fell. Overseas markets fell. The volatility index fell. And a lot of that I saw was based or attributed to reports from the ADP payroll report saying that the jobs numbers from the Labor Department today were going to be stronger than they should be. So people had to fear that the Fed was going to keep interest rates high and maybe raising them some more. But then today's report from the Labor Department came in and it was softer than expected, but still showing some resilience in the economy.
Yeah, so maybe the answer is somewhere in the middle between those two. But we went back to that dynamic, especially on Thursday, where good news was treated as bad news. The market had to quickly digest and realize that, okay, there's a fair amount of economic strength, whether it be in the labor force or broadly across the economy, is still marching us forward. And we're probably going to get another rate increase here in July, maybe another one later in this year. I don't know. But we got to remind our listeners that good news is ultimately good news, even if the market wants to temporarily digest it as something else. Good news is ultimately good news.
Thanks, Adam. Art, do you have I'm sorry, yeah, go ahead, Dave.
Sorry, Joel, I'm just saying, Adam, you brought up a good point. That's certainly what everybody thought across the board, why markets sold off yesterday on that elevated thing. But why didn't we get the reversal today when the jobs report came in actually a little softer than anticipated? And so that was a little bit of a surprise to me is why we thought the huge jobs anticipated by the ADP report would have suggested further Fed tightening than we expect. And yet today the numbers actually came in below forecast, but we didn't get a relief from investors today.
I think the lesson is you can't speculate. You really don't know what's going to happen. And unfortunately, that is what's driving stock prices. Every day somebody's speculating that something's going to happen because of something else. And the real news this week was, I think, the Fed's minutes coming out suggesting that they're going to stick to their knitting. They're going to raise interest rates. We know that employment is strong. We know the economy is stronger than expected. The fact that the long-term, the yield on the 10-year Treasury is also big news. You know, the fact that it went up, from 3.82 at the beginning of the week to 4.05, like you said, only maybe the second time this year we've been over 4%. Tells us that investors are finally getting the message that the Fed is serious and that perhaps we're not going to have this feared recession. All last year it was fear. Greed may kick in, you know, as earnings reports start coming out, especially if they can come out more favorably than their forecast. It's not going to be a great year for earnings. But as you've indicated to us, next year it's going to be a significantly better year as earnings are forecast to go up maybe 12%, you know, for the year. So we're buying now in advance of perhaps good news, you know, from the future.
Yeah, speaking of earnings, you know, that could be the answer to the question, you know, why didn't we get much relief today after, you know, a pullback on Thursday, in part because we're on the cusp of earnings season. It really hasn't yet begun with full force. And I think investors are really waiting to see what earnings are going to come in, not necessarily for last quarter. To be honest, like the first half of the year, there was nothing anticipated in terms of earnings growth. But the good news is, like, that's behind us. That's old news. The market is more anticipating what we could expect for the second half of this year, specifically the fourth quarter. Earnings growth estimates for the fourth quarter still somewhere in the 8 to 10% range. That's a big number. At some point, we're going to have to look ahead to next year for earnings. And at the moment, earnings growth expectations for next year, somewhere around 12%, with a revenue number of 5. Again, those are some big numbers. We're still waiting to see when earnings season kicks off next week, if that's really going to materialize. One of the reasons why we didn't see too much of a jump on Friday.
Is there any rhyme or reason as to when good news is considered bad news and not good news?
When the market goes up, good news is good news. Yeah. When the market goes down, good news is bad news. How's that?
Well, I think it's obviously been tied a lot to the Fed, right? I mean, that's kind of when you make that change from good news being bad news when you're in a tightening cycle. Because, you know, in effect, the Fed wants a little bit of bad news. I mean, that's the intention here, right? They're trying to slow things down.
But they ultimately want good news.
Well, yeah, long term,
and investors ultimately
want good news.
Good news over long periods of time is always good news.
Right, and just to get back to that Labor Department report today, so the Labor Department reported that 209,000 jobs were created in June. That's the lowest jobs addition that we've had in 30 months straight of additions. So it's been 30 months now that every month.
Which is very good.
Month after month. Yeah, it's very good. And that 209,000, even though it was the lowest, it's like two or three times more than what a lot of economists think we need to sustain our economy as far as job creation. So that's still pretty strong. But to the point, it's weaker than it has been. And that's what the Fed is trying to do is to slow down the economy so we don't have as high of inflation as we had before. Now, and as far as inflation is concerned, remember, it was what, like 9% or something a year ago. And now it's down to 4%, around 4%.
Yeah.
Next week, we're going to get the consumer price index number, and that's expected to come in closer to 3%. And this maybe should be celebrated. I haven't seen a whole lot about this, but in today's labor report, we saw that wages went up 4.4% in the last year, and that's the way the same it was in April and May, so that's tamed down a little, and that's higher than inflation right now. And Adam, I know that I remember you saying a lot on this show, that's what you want. You want your earnings to go up faster than inflation.
So as an economist, that is my number two favorite thing to see all time, is that wages are rising faster than inflation. And that's what we see because it directly relates to consumers. And consumers drive 70% of our economy. And if wages are rising faster than inflation, it points towards a sustained economic growth and momentum. And we're starting to see that. We did not see that last year when inflation spiked. But lo and behold, we're starting to see that now.
So we're talking a little about earnings. What about interest rates? We talked about yields being higher on the treasuries. What's that looking like these days, and how is that playing into what long-term investors should be looking at?
Joel, I think it's important that we consider the impacts of that rising interest rate as it reflects in our fixed income portfolios. You pointed out, Joel, that there was an article that we both read in the Wall Street Journal this week that talked about equity allocations for retirees are at near record highs. And obviously that's due to the fact that the last 10 years you didn't make much money in fixed income because of interest rates being near zero. So I think this is going to give an opportunity for retirees to rebalance going forward. Once there's some consensus that the Fed is primarily done with raising rates, I think you could see some migration for people to reallocate some of their portfolios to the safer side, and picking up fixed income on the short end of high quality that's paying in that 5-6% range would be a very welcome addition to any portfolio.
But the fact of the matter is, over time, and as that article points out, these may be gunslingers who are in their 80s or 90s going up to 80, 90, 75, whatever percent in equities, but they look back and they say, well, wait a minute, over the past 10, 15 years, stocks have been the place to be. Going forward, I think that's still going to be the case. Stocks should be the place where you get, you know, better returns than you get with bonds because you're taking less risk in bonds. And again, as we've talked about in recent shows, cash. I mean, you get 5% plus on a CD right now. So I think fixed income in our portfolio should be more for stability. Long term, yes, you know, bonds paying 5% for 10 years might be a safe bet. But I would also suggest that stocks should be considered to be the asset of choice for growth, you know, over time. That's why we do what we do. That's why we want to stay balanced. That's why we want to stay diversified.
And I think what I'm hearing from Dave too is that you can afford that balance better now.
Absolutely. Instead of having to push yourself outside of your comfort zone and getting to 70 or 80% equity allocations, you know, being a little bit more comfortable in that balance of 60, 40, 50, 50 kind of a mix.
Yeah, because bonds are now offering more competition to stocks. And you can get somewhere in the neighborhood of a 4-5% yield on a high-quality intermediate-term bonds. You can get that in shorter-term cash these days. And bonds, for no other reason, are starting to offer more competition to stocks.
But not for those people who are gunslingers and who want to make more money. And we see them every day in our practices. Some people have a higher risk tolerance. And you see it right now. I mean, with the NASDAQ up 31%. Why is that? We talked before about artificial intelligence. Sure, there's great opportunities. There's also opportunities to lose your money if things go the other way. The S&P up 15%. Another great article in the Wall Street Journal this week talking about the relatively poor performance of dividend-paying stocks. We love dividend-paying stocks. The Dow has a lot of them, for example, up under 3% for the year. Is it time to throw in the towel on the Dow? Absolutely not. You know, there are great opportunities long-term for methodical investors who keep, you know, investing in good quality stocks for the long haul, as well as some of the speculative stuff. So don't worry about what's happening day to day. Don't worry about whether people, you know, are disappointed or not as to what the news is. Just set your sights on the horizon and keep on sailing.
And while we're talking about the stocks, Adam, you were talking to me before about valuations for stocks and how, you know, they, if you look at the big picture, they seem kind of pricey right now, but...
Yeah, but is the operative word there. but this goes back to just the very basics of investing, like interest rates, earnings, valuations. These are the things that move markets long term. And so for valuations, you take a look at the S&P 500 or even the NASDAQ that you mentioned, Art. And we're up 31% in the NASDAQ, a lot of technology businesses. But you, when you start to strip away, like, what's contributing to this lofty valuation in terms of, like, the S&P 500, we got a PE on it on the market of somewhere around 20. But the top 10 businesses in the S&P 500 are driving the vast majority of that overvaluation, that lofty price. If you were to strip out those top 10 businesses, the remaining 490, well, they're more reasonably valued, somewhere around 17 times. So there's still deals to be found. To your point, Art, there's still deals to be found in stocks. Is it in the high-flying tech names, those top 10? Probably not, but there's still a lot of deals to be found. It all goes back to interest rates, earnings, and valuations, right? Interest rates still historically low, 10-year treasury 4%. Earnings expected to grow in the fourth quarter of this year and into next. And you take out those top 10 names of the S&P 500, there's some reasonably priced businesses out there.
Art, you worked with me on an article for our newsletter last week about giving while living, of sharing inheritances before you die. Some people can afford that. Some people can figure that out. But one of the points of the article was that you should figure that out, that you should plan your estate, that you should know you're not going to live forever. And if you've got money left over when you leave, you should make plans for that. And I know, Dave, that you've got some concerns about that. You've been witnessing, you know, some things where people just, for whatever reason, whether it's putting it off or you know, not wanting to admit that they're going to not be around forever.
Yeah, Joel, I just want to bring that up today as kind of a public service announcement too.
Thank you. Yeah,
you know, the people that you're leaving behind are going to have their hands full with lots of things to take care of. You know, obviously grief and other expenses. So leaving them with a mess as it relates to your estate just adds to the problem. And so I've just recently had experiences with a couple of outdated trusts that were contrary really to the person's wishes just because they hadn't looked at it in 25 years. Or I've also seen where they just plain and simply didn't have a comprehensive estate plan. So go out there, contact a professional on the estate planning side, and just get your affairs in order.
I think it's a great reminder. As much as we review investment plans on a regular basis, you gotta review your estate plan on a regular basis.
Great. Well, I think that's all we have for this week, but we'll have plenty more to talk about every week on the Money Talk podcast. Thanks for joining us, and tell your friends.
Thank you for listening to Money Talk with Bob Landis. If you have a financial question you want answered on next week's show, email it to moneytalk@landis.com. To keep informed throughout the week, visit our Money Talk page at landis.com.